The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, we officially have a new champion in the NBA. That would be the Denver Nuggets. They, of course, took care of business Monday night in Game 5 and finished off the Miami Heat 94-89. It actually was a pretty good game. I mean, Miami actually dominated the first half. And, Denver just kind of, they were able to just keep within distance. And then they really started to get it going in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter. It was just a back-and-forth game. But then towards the end of the fourth quarter, the Denver Nuggets just started to pull away. And you could just tell that the Heat were just throwing up any prayer they could. And the Denver Nuggets got the win. And it was a dominating fashion as well. You know, like I said, this is Denver's first NBA championship, so congratulations to them. I mean, it's always great to win your first one, and it makes you think, is this the beginning of a dynasty? Because, you know, Jokic, he's young, Jamal Murray, he's young, Gordon, he's young, and who knows what's going to happen in free agency or even the draft. But this was a dominating performance by the Denver Nuggets. I mean, their record in the playoffs was 16-4. So they only lost 4 games. And I mean, they pretty much took care of business against every single team they faced off in the postseason. And they just looked really good. Jokic was the MVP. So that's no shock there. He was also the first player ever to lead the postseason in points, rebounds, and assists. Throughout the entire playoffs. He ended up in this game with a double-double, 28 points, 16 rebounds, and 4 assists. And it was just a dominating performance from Jokic, but also a dominating performance from the Denver Nuggets overall. They played great defensively. Their bench stepped it up when they needed to. They had other role players step it up in different games when they needed to. And then, of course, the stars, Murray and Jokic, stepped it up when they had to. And their coach, Malone, he coached his ass off as well. I mean, just in my opinion, the Denver Nuggets just took care of business. I mean, they dominated the entire season, as a matter of fact. I doubted them from the beginning. I did not think they were, even though they were the number one overall seed, I didn't think for one second that they were going to be the NBA champions when the playoffs began. And here they are. They absolutely dominated, played great. And like I said, who knows where this is going to lead, but this is a damn good team for a while. Just because they do have 2 young, solid stars in Jokic and Murray, and they could build around these guys, and they're going to be a good team to try and compete with. Because, you know, with Jokic, he's something else. He's really difficult to guard. If you didn't see that in this postseason, you're blind. But Jokic is just he's a different type of beast. He makes the plays when necessary, but he even gets the prayers when necessary. Just like when he tosses up just a random shot and you're looking at him like, dude, that's not going to go in, and it goes in. That's kind of what kind of a player he is. So we'll see what the Denver Nuggets are able to do in the future, but they definitely dominated this entire season. They were unquestionably the best team from start to finish, and they were able to do that by just winning, and they did it in dominating fashion. So congratulations to the Denver Nuggets on a fantastic season from them. Then we also had a little bit of extra NBA news break today, beginning with Ja Morant. We all knew this was coming, some type of suspension from the NBA. They have decided to suspend him for the first 25 games of the season. I don't know if Morant's going to appeal that or not, or if they're going to try and see if they can knock it down a little bit. But regardless, we all knew he was getting suspended, and that sucks for the Grizzlies, and that also sucks for Morant. But maybe he'll learn something and stop being a fake-ass gangster, because he doesn't need to do that shit, but it's his life, so he could do what he wants with it. But he's going to be missing the first 25 games of next season, and that's a pretty big deal. That's a pretty big chunk of the season that he's going to be missing, and so that's a shitty way to begin the next season. And then also it broke today that Michael Jordan, who currently is one of the co-owners of the Charlotte Hornets, he's going to be selling the team. You know, they haven't been successful at all under his tenure, and maybe he's just sick of running this franchise, or maybe he's just going to take the money and maybe try and go and buy another franchise, or who knows what he's going to do. I mean, he's Michael Jordan. It doesn't really fucking matter. His legacy's sealed in cement, and we know he's going to be making money forever and for always, but I'm sure he's going to get a nice big chunk of change from whoever decides to buy the Hornets. But that was also a little bit of breaking news in the NBA today. Now moving on to baseball. This week of baseball, we had a couple of nice performances beginning on Monday night. JT Realmuto of the Philadelphia Phillies hit for the cycle. So he had a single, a double, a triple, and a home run all in one game. But unfortunately, it came in a 9-8 loss to the Arizona Diamondbacks. This was the first cycle in Philadelphia's history since 2004. So it's been close to 20 years since they've had a cycle there. And so that's always a nice performance that you always want to highlight. And then on Tuesday, it wasn't necessarily anything that had to do with any type of baseball performance, but Oakland A's fans have made it known that they're not really happy with the ownership of the team. And I mean, you can't blame them for being upset, because, you know, their team is moving to Vegas, whether they like it or not. And there's many reasons why they're moving to Vegas. Part of it is A's ownership, and part of it is the city of Oakland. But regardless, they do have a shitty field, and they do need a new stadium, because they currently play in Toilet Stadium. If you don't know, they literally have sewage on the regular spewing out onto the field. This is not a place you want to be playing baseball or watching baseball. But I guess it fits the Oakland A's and how they play baseball. Very shitty. Although they've actually been pretty decent the last couple of weeks, but I don't expect that to last long. But anyways, the Oakland A's fans, I understand you being pissed off because your team's moving, blah, blah, blah. But they decided to do a protest this week. Now, I put the word protest in quotes because what they did is not an actual protest. See, when you're protesting something, you want to take away, like, revenue from the A's. But, I mean, nobody's really been attending Oakland A's games over the last couple of seasons, which is one of the reasons why they want to move. But I digress. It's attendance. They set record lows this season for attendance. The Oakland A's fans decided to do a protest this week. And their protest was to buy tickets to the game and have a high attendance at the game and, like, yell at the ownership, I guess. And so they had, like, 28,000 people, I believe, come out, which is the most people that have come out to a game all season long for the A's. And, you know, you pay for those seats. And they did. They chanted, sell the team, I believe, is something they chanted. And then some people were wearing stupid-ass shirts with stupid fucking slogans that they think are going to stop the team from moving to Vegas. And then they did the super classy thing of throwing trash on the field after the game was over. But regardless, I put this protest in quotes because that's not a protest. You literally gave A's ownership a bunch of money. And they're not moving, by the way. I mean, they're not staying, by the way. They're 100% moving. I mean, they did finally approve the stadium that's gonna happen. They will still be playing in Oakland next season. They still have to play the 2024 season there. So one more season in Toilet Stadium. But I don't see how you giving the ownership a bunch of money and the best day, really, that's the best day they've had at the park is you yelling chants at them, and that's not going to stop anything. So your protest did a whole lot of nothing other than make ownership a whole bunch of money. So congratulations on your protest, A's fans, but your protest should have been not going to the games and not watching the games, but that's something you already have been doing over the last couple of seasons, which is part of the reason why they want to move to Vegas. But okay, congratulations. You gave them a bunch of money. Congrats. And so I thought that was stupid, of course, because it is stupid. But I've been amused by, there's been a couple of articles written about how they thought that was a good thing that the A's fans did, and they really got their message across from, you know, these idiot blowhards. And I'm just like, you gave them a bunch of money. You gave them their best day of revenue of this season. So I don't get it, but cool. And like I said, the A's are actually playing pretty well right now. Yeah, that was a very odd protest. But anyways, back to actual baseball that happened on the field. Then last night, Shohei Ohtani is showing why he's making a big case for MVP this year. He had a huge game yesterday against the Texas Rangers in an Angels win, 5-3 win. He smashed another home run just out of the park. Then he also pitched six innings and had two earned runs, but and he got another win on the season. But that home run is his 22nd of the season, which ties him with Pete Alonso for the most home runs on the season. So Ohtani is just killing it, both pitching and hitting. And the Angels are getting wins, too, so that's what matters the most. But he just seems to be getting better as the season wears on, and I am completely in favor of that. All right, now speaking of baseball, let's get into the College Baseball World Series, which was very heartbreaking as a Longhorns fan on Monday night. They just lost a heartbreaker to Stanford. In we were just this close to moving on, and unfortunately, in extra innings, there was a pop-up in the outfield, and none of the guys who were in the outfield really called for the ball. Nobody knew who was going to get the ball, and ultimately, the ball just dropped right in front of three different players, and Stanford was able to get the game-winning run in because of that, and the Longhorns just lost in heartbreaking fashion, so that sucked, so they're out of it, so... we do have a bunch of good matchups set for this weekend, beginning with Wake Forest versus Stanford. I picked Wake Forest to win it all, so I got to stick with Wake Forest in this matchup. Then we have Florida versus Virginia. I, of course, picked Virginia in this matchup, and I'm going to stick with Virginia in that matchup. Then we have LSU versus Tennessee. I picked LSU to move on in that matchup, and I'm going to stick with LSU. And then, of course, we've got my favorite named team, Oral Roberts. Oral. And TCU, and I, of course, picked good old Oral Roberts to move on, and I'm going to stick with good old Oral Roberts to move on. So we'll see what happens in the College Baseball World Series this weekend, but Wake Forest is just, they're dominating just like we expected that they should. All right, and now this week's, moving on to this week's Top 5 list, decided to theme it up with the holiday weekend of Father's Day, which is super ironic because I don't have a father, so I've never celebrated Father's Day in my whole life. My father kicked me to the curb when I was 2 years old, so I didn't know him, didn't care to know him, and now you know. Katie has daddy issues, so if you didn't know, now you know. I did decide to theme this Top 5 this week to theme with Father's Day because I've already done the Top 5 baseball father-son duos and then the NBA father-son duos, so today I decided to do the Top 5 NFL father-son combos because... there's a few on here where there's three family members who have played from the same family, but we actually have quite a bit of... it was actually difficult to whittle this down to five because there's actually been so many really good father-son combos to work its way through the history of the NFL. So let's begin with number five. on my top five NFL father-son combos. That would be Steve Jordan and Cam Jordan. Steve Jordan was a tight end for the Minnesota Vikings for 13 years. And, he played years ago. And then his son Cam Jordan currently plays in the league right now. He's defensive end of the New Orleans Saints. But his dad, Steve Jordan, actually, he has Hall of Fame numbers. He's never really been considered for a Hall of Famer. Who knows? Maybe down the way he will. But he's got some great numbers for a 13-year tight end. He had 498 receptions, 6,307 yards, and 28 touchdowns. And then his son, Cam Jordan, has been a beast of a defensive end since the day he hit the league. He's had an 11-year career, so he's closing in on his dad's 13 years. He has a career total so far of 639 tackles, 115 and a half sacks, 2 interceptions, and 1 TD. So he could add to that. I believe this is actually going to be Cam Jordan's last year. I seem to recall hearing that he's basically said that this year is going to be his last year. Who knows? But both excellent football players. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of Cam Jordan's father, Steve Jordan, just because, like I said, he's got Hall of Fame numbers, but he never gets considered, probably because he played for the Vikings at a time when they weren't really a flashy team who you really talked about. They weren't really winning Super Bowls or anything, so he just played for them and just was a great overall player. But Cam Jordan has most certainly been one of the best defensive ends in the league over his 11-year career. And so I just felt like those two guys, statistically, their longevity of their careers, 100% an excellent father-son combo right there. Then at number 4 on my top 5 NFL father-son combos, Clay Matthews Sr., Jr., and the third. So Clay Matthews Sr., he was an offensive lineman for the San Francisco 49ers in the 1950s. Then Clay Matthews Jr. was a linebacker for the Cleveland Browns and the Atlanta Falcons. He wasn't a real dominating player, but he was he definitely had a solid career. He played his entire career, and I believe he even made a couple of Pro Bowls and was even an All-Pro one year, I believe, as well, second team. But regardless, he had a solid career. But, of course, Clay Matthews III was probably the best out of the three so far. He was a linebacker for the Green Bay Packers for the most part. He won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. But during his time in the NFL, he was one of the best linebackers. For about a good 5-year run there, he was solid. You never wanted to go over the middle where he was at. He was always always in the face of quarterbacks. He was also a ball hawk at times as well. So he just had a very successful career. But they all had great careers. And who knows? We may see more Matthews in the league as the years wear on. Then at number 3 on my top 5 NFL father-son combos, Howie Long, Chris Long, and Kyle Long. Now, Howie Long was one of the greatest defensive ends of all time. He played for the Oakland/Los Angeles Raiders. He won a Super Bowl with them. He also won a Defensive Player of the Year award with the Raiders. He was one of the greatest defensive ends, hands fucking down. I mean, he was a beast. And he was one of the most, him and Reggie White were like the top dudes in the league around this era. And just Howie Long was such an amazing defensive end and just a legendary career. He was voted All Pro numerous occasions as well. And so he just had a Hall of Fame career because he is in the Hall of Fame. Chris Long also followed in the footsteps of his father. He was a defensive end. He played with the St. Louis Rams, the New England Patriots, and the Philadelphia Eagles. He actually won 2 Super Bowls with the New England Patriots. So he has more Super Bowls than both his father and his brother Kyle. He also finished his career with 70 sacks as well. So he had a very solid, long career. And then Kyle Long, he decided to go the opposite route of those two. He played offensive line for his career. He most notably played with the Chicago Bears for the most part. And he was also an All-Pro player. So all three of these guys came into the league, made an impact. I don't think the Suns made as much of an impact as Howie did, but all three of them definitely had solid careers and Super Bowl champions, except for Kyle. Sorry, dude. Then at number 2 on my top 5 NFL father-son combos, Ed McCaffrey and Christian McCaffrey. in my personal opinion, because I got to see his career, Ed McCaffrey is one of the most underrated receivers of all time. This guy used to be so fucking consistent. You just throw the ball in his area and he's got it. He was kind of overshadowed by Shannon Sharpe, of course, because Shannon Sharpe's one of the greatest tight ends of all time. Then, of course, you got John Elway on the team as well. And then in the later years, you got Terrell Davis when they go on their Super Bowl run. So I feel like Ed McCaffrey got overshadowed by a lot of that Denver Broncos team, but Ed McCaffrey was a bad motherfucker during his time. He was a wide receiver for both the San Francisco 49ers and the Denver Broncos. He has won three Super Bowls in his time, and he was just, like I said, very consistent. He had, I think, 3 or 4 years in a row where he went over 1,000 receiving yards, and he was just, to me, one of the most underrated receivers in that era. Because, I mean, if you go back to this 80s, 90s, beginning 2000s, kind of around the time when McCaffrey played, there were a lot of underrated receivers at that time. You know, you got Tim Brown, who gets overshadowed a lot, too, by Jerry Rice. And then, of course, Michael Irvin. And there were a lot of great receivers in this era. I just think Ed McCaffrey was one of them, but you don't really talk about him a lot. And then, of course, Christian McCaffrey, he's been a running back currently in the league. He played for the Carolina Panthers, but now is with the San Francisco 49ers. He's obviously one of the top guys in the league right now. So far with his career, he's rushed for over 4,726 yards and 38 touchdowns. And he's obviously going to be adding to that. He could potentially win Super Bowls. Who knows where this guy's career is going to go. He's obviously got a few more years in him, too. So we'll see what happens with it. But both of these guys are extremely talented. And I just feel like I said, McCaffrey, very underrated, three Super Bowls. And then Christian, who knows what's going to happen with his career. He definitely has the potential to win an MVP. He definitely has the potential to lead the league in rushing and just win Super Bowls and just add to his career. And he definitely, I think, could potentially catch up to his dad, although three Super Bowls is going to be difficult to get to, let alone getting one. He definitely has a lot of work that can be done with his resume. And then, of course, number one on my top five NFL father-son combos is, of course, the Mannings. Archie Manning, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, and I think we can possibly add in Arch Manning. He's got a question mark, but we might be adding a fourth to this already amazing three-headed monster here with Archie, Peyton, and Eli. I knew when I started this list, I was like, oh, I'm 100% that they're number one. I didn't think there was going to be anybody who could come close just because, I mean, let's go with Peyton Manning is legitimately one of the greatest, not only just quarterbacks, but football players of all time. The dude changed the game. No matter what you feel about Peyton Manning, the dude changed the game, and he is a GOAT. So obviously him alone really just elevates him above all these other combos. But then also Eli, he's got a couple of Super Bowls, and as much as people like to laugh at Eli, he's got a couple of Super Bowls. He played on two teams that beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. His New York Giants team beat a New England Patriots team that was so fucking dominant that they didn't lose one game until that Super Bowl against the New York Giants. So, and Eli was a huge part of why they won. And I mean, hey, as much as I hated Eli because he played for the New York Giants and I'm a Cowboys fan, so I rooted against that asshole for many years, not only because he was a Giant, but he used to kick our fucking ass all the time. I saw it in person, as a matter of fact. Ugh. But anyways, Eli showed up for the playoffs. Unlike some motherfuckers, Eli showed up when it mattered, and so I'm sorry, the resumes of both Peyton and Eli matter. To me, I've always thought Archie Manning was a bit on the overrated side. Don't get me wrong, he was a pretty decent quarterback, but I think a lot of people like to overrate him just because of his two sons. But he did play quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. Peyton played quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos, of course. He won two Super Bowls and five MVPs, which is also a record. And I mean, Peyton's career stats are just endless, so I'm not even going to start. But we all know Peyton's one of the greatest of all time. And so, duh. And then, like I said, with Eli, quarterback of the New York Giants, he won 2 Super Bowls and he showed up when it mattered the most. And he had a solid career. No matter what you think of that dude, he had a solid career. And if I was Eli, I'd be pretty proud of what the fuck I did with my career as well. And then, like I said, now they've got their nephew, Arch Manning, who is playing for my Texas Longhorns this year. Doesn't look like he's going to be starting this year at quarterback, nor should he. I mean, it's his first year. So he's probably going to be more looking at next year. So we'll see what happens with Arch Manning. But there's high expectations surrounding him. Hopefully he has a good little stint with my Texas Longhorns. But I have a feeling we're going to see him getting drafted into the NFL. And we are probably going to be talking about another Manning and maybe adding to this already huge accomplishments to this family of quarterbacks. So that's my top 5 NFL father-son combos. So now I've taken care of that with all 3 of the major sports, with baseball, basketball, and now football. So enjoy the weekend of sports. It's pretty much just all baseball from here on out. Now that the NBA finals are complete, you know, we've got the NBA draft around the corner. We're about a month out from training camp with the NFL, but it's pretty much just baseball, and more baseball. So I will talk to you fools on Monday.